Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey everyone, just before we start the show, I wanted to take a second to say a few words about our very kind sponsors. 100 Resilient Cities is a part of the Rockefeller Foundation, which you'll probably know is one of the world's largest charitable endowments. 100 Resilient Cities is focused on helping cities around the world become more resilient to the social, physical and economic challenges of the 21st century. They're doing some excellent projects in terms of, you know, environmental sustainability, in terms of economic sustainability, and just in terms of, you know, making life generally better for everyone in cities from Manchester to Miami, to Melbourne, to Montevideo. You can find out lots more, including reading up on some of those fantastic projects, at their website, which is 100resilientcities.org. Anyway, now on with the show.
This is a Manhattan-bound B Express train. The next stop is Grand Street.
Mind the gap.
Hello, I'm John Ellidge, and this is Skyline's The City Metric Podcast. Something we haven't nerded out about enough recently, I think, is Britain's, how many metro mayors are there now? It's somewhere between 6 and 8, depending on how you count, I think. But it feels like an important topic that we've been neglecting. So, I've invited the New Statesman special correspondent, Stephen Bush, to join me so we can, kick some tires. Hello, Stephen. How are you?
I'm well. Do you know who may not be doing so well?
Who may not be doing so well?
Sadiq Khan and also this segue. It's a fun time to kind of kick their tyres because Britain's first metro mayoralty, the London mayor, is midway through Sadiq Khan's first or perhaps only term.
I think it's probably his first term. I mean, like, we're gonna talk about how, like, maybe he's not as great as it's sometimes assumed, but a lot would have to change for a Tory to have any chance of beating him in 2 years' time, I think, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the fascinating thing from a kind of, to put my kind of day-to-day political journalist hat on, the fascinating thing about it from a race perspective is that on the one hand he is a very, very formidable incumbent. There are loads and loads of reasons why you can see why the conservative field of candidates to run against him is quite low powered, and you can see why the
insanely low powered. It's only one MP even wanted it, and was one who they were clearly never going to let anywhere near it.
It was an interesting, yeah. I mean, Rosendale was an interesting.
It's Andrew Rosendale, the MP for the land of my father's Romford.
I'm still disappointed, and they did not put him on the shortlist because one. I mean, the prospect of him running would have been an interesting way to find out what the core vote of the Conservatives in London was. I mean,
how few votes could they get?
Yeah, this is a man who is on the record having insulted 5 of London's 32 boroughs, and wants
which 5?
Hackney, Newham, Tower Hamlets, Camden, and
Islington.
Islington separate. So 4 of them, he basically was just like, you know, Romford will become a crime.
There are brown people
a
here.
Crime-ridden hellhole.
I'm not saying that Romford will become like them in that there will be more brown people, but I also am. That is exactly what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what he was saying.
Yeah, and then Islington, he's done the kind of usual sort of like, oh, it's full of metro lefties kind of thing. He wants to build, he's in favour of the third runway, so he wants to expand the number of flights going over a further 3 boroughs, 2 of which are must-win for any Conservative mayoral candidate, and he's pro-Brexit. So you
only five London boroughs voted for Brexit.
Yeah. So you have a candidate who is almost optimised to do a very poorly in London.
So vote repellent, really.
Yeah. Sadly, the Conservative Party decided not to shortlist him. I can understand why, but I'm also bitterly disappointed because we could have learned an awful lot from the process.
A couple of interesting things about Rossendale that aren't really exactly about politics, but he used to campaign with a bulldog wearing a Union Jack, and well into his 40s, he still lived with his mother. No idea what any of those things mean. I just kind of think he's an interesting figure.
He's an interesting figure, but sadly not our future mayor.
So who is on the shortlist? You've got Andrew Boff, who's a member of the Greater London Authority, who I think is probably he's made the shortlist a number of times, but never actually got that close because he's fundamentally not that big a figure. But he's like, I think he's quite credible. I mean
he definitely could do it, right?
I mean, reading his, I kind of went through the sort of the policy statements of the three on the shortlist, and the thing about Boff is that he is trying to come up with solutions to the problems that London faces, but they have a very obviously Tory flavour. Like, there's a lot of stuff in there about crime. He was talking about transport and so on. Like, he is kind of engaged with the issues, but also recognisably Tory, which is a rarity, I think.
Yeah. Sean Bailey.
I kind of think if Sean Bailey was going to happen, he would have happened by now.
Well, it is that thing with any oft-talked-up rising star. After a while, their failure to rise does become indicative in itself.
So Sean Bailey is... he was a councillor. He's now a GLM member as well, I think. But he was a councillor in a West London borough. Kensington, I think?
Hammersmith. For a bit. Because he was the PPC in Hammersmith in 2010. Back when Hammersmith was considered a marginal seat.
But I think his ward as a councillor might have been in Kensington, because I seem to remember he was talking about Grenfell as a big thing. But he's a black British guy, grew up on one of the estates in North Kensington, and was talked up literally a decade ago as one of the Cameroons, sort of new faces of the Conservative Party, and then has failed to get elected to Parliament twice. And he does sort of seem to be one of those people who's been as you say, he's been talked of as a rising star for so long. The fact he's not yet risen has become, it would have been better for him if nobody had talked him up in some ways.
Yeah. Joy Morrissey rounds out the list of three. She is a councillor in Ealing,
yeah.
And was the parliamentary candidate in 2017.
American-born, I believe, businesswoman.
Yeah. And is on a kind of CSJ, Centre for Social Justice linked.
Ian Duncan Smith's... think tank.
Yeah. Now, so the big problem I think that all three candidates have is, and I think this is a thing that a lot of people who have moved to London and who aren't from London and who don't live in London at all don't really get about the capital, is actually Londoners, particularly indigenous Londoners of all kind of creeds and colours, are actually just as chauvinistic as anyone else in the country. It's just they're chauvinistic about their kind of natural chauvinism about their place expresses itself in slightly insidiocratic ways. One of which is, I find it hard to imagine a situation in which anyone I grew up with, these people who voted for Ken and Boris and for Sadiq, would accept someone who hadn't even been an MP.
Interesting.
As candidate?
Yeah, I mean, historically, both parties have gone for these big figures. Like, say what you like about Zach Goldsmith, he had a reputation, I say many awful things about the awful, overprivileged man who clearly never used the tube and had weird views on race relations. He was quite a big name. Like, he was, again, he was a rising star, but of that kind of Sean Bailey Cameroon era, but he'd actually, won a seat and done some stuff.
I do also think part of Zach Goldsmith's problem, even before the various decisions and dog whistles his campaign opted for, was that he was not, I don't think it needs to be a character, but I think...
he doesn't have a personality.
Yeah, it has to be someone who can basically go, who's great, we're great, I'm going to stand up to the city, not as in the city, London, the city as a whole, the city against everyone else, we're the best, we're king of the world. And I just don't think Zach Goldsmith could carry that off, and I do think that was a big problem.
He feels like a Shire Tory.
Yeah.
Like, he feels like, his seat is Richmond, but Richmond Park, which is, Richmond upon Thames, but he feels like he should be MP for somewhere in Oxfordshire or somewhere in the Cotswolds. He didn't feel very London. Like, that, I really think that one of the most embarrassing moments of that perpetually embarrassing campaign was when he was doing an interview with, some BBC reporter who was driving a taxi, as you do. and he couldn't name the next stop on the Central Line. That feels like weirdly like it's just have you been to London? That feels like a basic thing that someone should know if they want to run London's transport system.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, he had this problem. Ironically, given the kind of various stereotypes people outside of have about the capital, he was just too deracinated to be an acceptable candidate to most Londoners. I think the problem these three have is, although they are more kind of from London and grounded in it, they're just not. I mean, they're just not high-powered and impressive enough.
Mm.
Now, equally, though, Sadiq Khan, from a policy perspective, should be quite a weak incumbent. I mean, other than the hopper.
Yeah, so the hopper is the... Not that long ago, if you changed buses in London, you would have to pay two fares, which doesn't happen if you take the tube. Mm. So the hopper fare is a way of, like, within a certain time period, you can keep switching buses. And obviously, this other thing where, like, you have to pay two fares was, like, a direct economic disadvantage to people who lived in areas dependent on the bus, because, like, they would have to pay double fare or something in a way people who lived on wherever it was in the tube network would not.
Yeah.
So it was basically a sort of tax on the poor. That is kind of his most solid policy achievement, I think. The housing stuff, it's difficult to see exactly what he's done, but to be fair, James Murray, the deputy mayor for housing, who used to be my councillor and once fixed my gate, I had a drink with him just before he took the job, and he was, and like I said to him, you know, what would success look like? And he paused and said, after 4 years, the tanker would be beginning to turn. So I think there was always a recognition of how slow it was going to be to actually kind of make a dent in anything. But nonetheless, it is not clear to me that the tanker is doing anything.
Yeah, I think the most damning thing actually is the fare freeze.
Which has just sucked a whole load of money out of. And this has come at the point that the central government is just basically removing revenue support grant, right?
Yeah, and the fare freeze really is was actually in many ways a primary policy. And actually one of the interesting things about actually all of the metro mayors, I think, is within the ones which are real cities, they are all going to become, the Labour primary is going to gradually become more and more important than the general election.
Why so?
Well, because it seems to me unlikely that anyone is going to defeat the Labour candidate in Greater Merseyside, whatever you want to call that one, Greater Manchester or the Greater London mayoralty, which means that some of the promises that Sadiq Khan made were primarily about defeating Tessa Jowell rather than defeating Zach Goldsmith. And it feels to me unlikely that will change in London in the foreseeable future. Does that slightly incentivize policies which reward your selectorate rather than the electorate? Yeah, probably. Does it also mean that you are less likely to have a situation where you have to... Because the thing that Zach Goldsmith never successfully managed to do, because instead he decided to go down a weird rabbit warren of Islamophobic tropes, was to make the point that, yeah, but wait a second, if you're going to have this fare freeze, what does this mean for the condition of the tube line?
Yeah, it's worth spelling this out a little bit. So Sadiq Khan, his kind of cornerstone promise was a fare freeze on the tube. Now, the problem is that tube fares are basically subsidising everything else on London transport. Like, there is an interpretation which TfL is quite keen to push, but does seem to be accurate in its way, that because TfL is responsible for the kind of core... The trunk roads on London's road network. The local streets are council ones, but kind of the main roads are run by TfL. Because it is no longer getting money from central government, this means that perversely, tube passengers are in fact subsidising car drivers, which is crazy. Like, that's barking. That's not something you would hear anywhere else. But it's kind of a measure of like how successful TfL has been at its job this last sort of decade or two. But the fare freeze means that, you know, at the time they've had to basically cut back on investment, like on basically everything, right?
Yeah. And because the fare freeze is on pay-as-you-go rather than travel cards, it's not, I think, actually something that a large chunk of voters thank him for either.
Yeah, it's kind of the worst of all worlds.
Now, of course, that won't be the centrepiece of the Conservative campaign. The Conservative campaign will be crime is up, step two, question mark, step three, Sadiq Khan defeated. I think the crime thing is actually not as lucrative a... argument as they think. People kind of think it's the Now, actually, now, of course, the truth is that there are the mayor of London is responsible for crime in a variety of ways. But I think then people just intuitively buy Sadiq Khan's argument then, well, if you cut policing, then crime is going to go up. And also because crime is going up everywhere, it is quite hard to make any of the arguments that it is a London problem stick.
I think also it's just like the vagueness of the mayor's responsibilities really helps. Like I remember probably in Boris Johnson's first term, there was a brief attempt to kind of make, it was a bloody hashtag, I think, get a grip, Boris. Mm. And like just try and pin certain stuff that was going wrong to him. And it just didn't work. Like I thought he was a dreadful mayor, particularly early on, but like he remained incredibly popular because people treat the mayoralty as this kind of figurehead rather than someone deeply involved in the nitty gritty of policy.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So let's talk briefly about the other cities. So I think Liverpool and Manchester, it's like the incumbents, if they want another term, there's another term waiting for them, right?
Yeah.
There's no way that Andy Burnham or Steve Rotherham are going to shift.
And I think... Andy Burnham, admittedly, they've also only been in office, all of the other mayoral metro mayors have only been in office for a year. But I think Andy Burnham has done a very good job. He's doing lots of he's trying to do lots of interesting things in housing. Well, I think
some of the cycle path policies coming down from Manchester, genuinely, like, I was, as a cyclist in London, I was like looking at these things thinking, bloody hell, I'm jealous of that.
I do think Andy was, as well as being a great candidate, you know, he significantly overran the Labour ticket in that election, has clearly thought a lot about it and is doing a very good job.
They're trying to get into stuff on homelessness up there as well. Like, he's been spending a lot of time shouting at Northern Rail and Chris Grayling over the crisis, which we discussed in this podcast a few episodes back with Jem Williams of the Manchester Evening News. He's putting in a sort of a fair performance, I think. Steve Rotherham, I'm not really sure what he's up to. But I don't know if that's because there is less reporting from Liverpool makes it down to London than does from Manchester, or whether it's because there is kind of still that sort of weird division of powers where there's the mayor of Liverpool and mayor of the Liverpool City region, and they're kind of like, you know, beefing it out a bit.
Well, I think it's a combination of the two, right? Then there's, I mean, obviously Andy Burnham also has a continual battle about who runs the conurbation. Is it him, or is it, you know, is it Manchester Council itself? But Andy Burnham seems to be decisively winning that, whereas it is less clear in the case of the Greater Liverpool mayoralty. So in some ways, the odd thing is the two weakest incumbents from an electoral perspective are the Conservatives in the Tees Valley and
the
West Midlands.
Neither of whom... If Labour had been doing as you would hope an opposition would be doing at that point in the cycle, neither of those should have got elected. And this has kind of been forgotten now, like quite how terrible those May 2017 local election results were for Labour, because a month later, like, they did unexpectedly well in general. But in May 2017, it was basically a disaster zone for Labour. I think in the West Midlands, it was in large part because, let's be honest, Sean Simon was a terrible candidate.
I mean, I think Sean Simon was a poor candidate, but I mean, you can't ever escape the national picture. I mean, obviously, the grimmest but most obvious example of that is, of course, Kensington, right, where there is quite literally a 70-foot monument to the council not being very good at doing some things right. They still got re-elected very comfortably. Yeah. Why? Because it's a national, local elections do largely reflect national standing. But equally, because it was so close in the West Midlands.
It was close. It was something insane, like 50.5 to 49.5.
One assumes a better Labour candidate would have ridden that out.
He was just complacent. I mean, like, I got, when I went up to meet him to record him for this podcast, I got the distinct impression that, like, he was just talking about how, like, everyone always talked about how Labour, Manchester and Liverpool were, but if you looked at the West Midlands, it was really only a few points behind. And it's like, that did not feel like the argument of a man who was hungry to go out there and fight an election. I have heard from people up there in the local party that he thinks he might stand again, and that the local parties are not so keen on this idea.
Yeah, I mean, it is an interesting one, because it was such a bad cycle. I mean, you would have expected, if those mayoral elections had been held with the local elections we had this year, from how Labour did in those ones, you would assume that both that and Tees Valley would have been Labour wins. And so you'd think that it would be an attractive slot for someone, particularly as there are a lot of high-powered and well-qualified Labour MPs in the conurbation who are not politically aligned with the Labour leadership nationally. And you'd think that a lot of them might think, do you know what? I'd like to run something. Mm.
So you've got, like, Gisela Stewart, she's on the way out as an MP.
Yeah.
Jess Phillips, possibly.
Liam Byrne, who's been a cabinet minister. You have got a lot of people who really could do it, many of whom you can see might sort of go, do you know what?
I think Labour's best candidate up there would probably be Tom Watson, actually. He's currently busy as deputy leader, being told to piss off by various Corbynites because he's taking a stand against anti-Semitism. But I think he is kind of like one of the bigger figures in the West Midlands Labour Party in every sense, really. And I think he would actually put in a good show both as a candidate and as a mayor.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he would do it because it would mean...
he's too committed to Westminster.
Losing his constitutionally important role as deputy leader.
But I mean, I always felt like Sean Simon was basically there as his mini-me, yeah, which was not great.
But so the question is, I guess, is... Now, Andy Street is doing a lot. The Conservatives are putting a lot of resource, both from a political and a Treasury perspective, into him and the idea of re-electing him. Whether or not that's enough. The weird thing is, right, is basically if you were just eyeballing it as a political scientist, if a political scientist had dropped down from Mars, they knew nothing about any of the politics, but they just knew about how electoral cycles worked, you'd eyeball it and you'd go, well, the Conservatives will lose that one. But they are putting a lot of resources into it, so...
Yeah, and the West Midlands has kind of drifted towards the blue column because it's quite Leavey. Despite being incredibly ethnically diverse, it's a surprisingly kind of Leavey conurbation. I don't know. I kind of instinctively think Street will do it again because he's just like... I mean, there's an incumbency advantage.
People tend to want to reward incumbents. There's quite a strong thing going that people feel that you deserve a second term. First-term incumbents are hard to beat, but I think he'll lose.
Really?
Yeah, I think he'll lose just because, one, my assumption isn't the Brexit deal will either not happen at all, and at that point we are really in, you know, quite dangerous and choppy political waters, and I can't see how incumbent politicians are going to ride that out. Or the Brexit deal will be something which looks a lot like Chequers. I will disappoint at least some Leave voters. And the Conservative performance in the West Mids is so dependent on their ability to leverage the votes of most people who voted to leave. So I just find it hard to conceive of an electoral situation in which he is able to be re-elected.
Okay, well, I instinctively think he'll do it, but that might just be because I'm reading across from the last election. We'll see. Let's do the Tees Valley. So the Tees Valley was, of course, the great tragedy of the last Metro Mayoral Electoral Cycle when the sainted Sue Jeffrey lost to that upstart Ben Houchin, who's actually not been terrible.
Yeah, he's kind of, I think, having essentially ran to raise his profile.
Yeah, he kind of ran this sort of trolling campaign, doing like, but he actually does seem to have kind of got his hands dirty with policy since he's been in the job, and it's like, so, you know.
One of the weird things about that election cycle is that people treated the Tees Valley right from the beginning on both sides like it was not a serious contest in the way that the West Mids was. But from a vote share perspective, right, they both have exactly the same... Yeah, the partisan balance of the two conurbations was essentially the same.
I wonder if it's because, like, the Tees Valley region is the old sort of made-up county of Cleveland, which was, like, bits of North Yorkshire and bits of County Durham that happened to be by the Tees Valley. But they also stuck an extra... But I think Darlington was the one that was never in Cleveland. Mm. So I think people were reading across from Cleveland, which had not been marginal, forgetting that Darlington kind of changed the mix quite a lot.
Yeah, I think that probably was why. My assumption is, again, the same dynamic that will play out in the West Mids, I expect to play out in the Tees Valley next time, with the added problem that... So the odd thing is that Ben Houchen ought to be seen by Conservative strategists and crucially by the Conservative Treasury as an equally defensible and important mayoral victory, because from a mathematical perspective, that is no less marginal than the West Mids. Mm. But because everyone on both sides basically believes that the Tees Valley was an astonishing win, he's kind of people... Yeah, a lot of Conservatives talk about him in the same way that Labour strategists would talk about people who'd won really, really safe Tory seats in 97 and 2001. You know, there's four who got knocked off. And whenever you read diaries from that period, there's basically I met someone from this place, which has only ever been Labour, from Hornchurch or whatever. Well, we're not bad, Warwick. We're not expecting him to come back.
Yeah.
Right. And there is that weird way that people do that with Ben Houchen, so I think he will receive even less central government help, which means he will definitely...
Also, it's a small conurbation, it's a long way from London, they're just... You know, it's the one people sort of forget exists at all, I think. Talking of which, we won't do Cambridgeshire and Peterborough, because that's going to be safe Tory. Like, James Palmer seems like a decent enough sort as these things go, but like that one's not moving. If he wants re-election, he's got it. Mm. The West of England is more interesting because that did have the potential to be a three-way marginal, which was talked up quite a lot by the Lib Dem Stephen Williams. It turned out not be that close to three-way marginal, as I recall, but Labour didn't do too badly. Do you think they could? Do you think the party has any hope next time round?
I think that mayoralty, I mean, to have my sort of brief hate on for the supplementary vote, was an election which really exposed the problem with the supplementary vote, because it was a three-way marginal. You had to guess, basically, which way to stop. And if you look at the number of wasted votes, so people who have gone, I'm going to vote Green, and the Liberals are going to be in the final round, there was quite a large number. So I think the problem for the Conservatives there will be that next time it will be obvious who the not-Conservative candidate is, which you would assume becomes a problem for them in the supplementary vote. So, I would expect a much redder complexion of Metro mayors in 3 years' time.
Okay, we should be wrapping up, but one last thing. We haven't talked about Sheffield, because that's... First, it's a reasonably pointless mayoralty, because it has no powers whatsoever, and even the incumbent Dan Jarvis doesn't really think it should be there, because he wants it to be a bigger Yorkshire deal, and also it's incredibly safe Labour. Are there going to be any more by 2020? There have been a couple, like there was the North Tyne one, which is basically old Northumberland, but does mean there's a weird thing of like effectively cutting the Newcastle urban area in two because Gateshead and Sunderland didn't want to play, which seems stupid to me, but there we are.
I mean, I think there won't be any more in this Parliament because...
I don't think there's the bandwidth or the interest, frankly.
Yeah, Theresa May is not interested in them anyway, but even if she were, there is no parliamentary or civil service capacity, which means that no one is actually that interested in going. I do think that it's sad because I think, you know, there is a strong argument for a stronger local government face in kind of the Sheffield City region. But I do think that actually that will just be one of those weird trivia questions. You know, and people kind of go, who was the only Sheffield City region? Oh, Dan Jarvis. When is there going to be the parliamentary time, energy or inclination under Theresa May? during Brexit, or indeed afterwards, when the Conservative Party will, I imagine, primarily at that point be focused on throwing any number of bribes it thinks it can afford at the electorate to get them to not hate them.
Okay, well, you heard it here first. Sheffield City Region, always in their hearts. You're with the Angels now. See you next time. You've been listening to Skylines, the podcast from City Metric, the New Statesman City site. It was presented and produced by me, John Ellidge. If you enjoyed the episode, then please do consider leaving us an iTunes review. It really helps other people to discover the show. And, you know, the more people get listening to the show, the sooner I can achieve my real goal of world domination for the medium of trains. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.